Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have with us Julie Smolansky. She is the CEO of Lifeway Foods, a company that she took over as CEO at age 27 when her father unexpectedly passed away. She became the youngest female CEO of a publicly traded company at the age of 27. And she has some great lessons that she's learned in her career, and she's going to share those lessons with us today. Looking forward to our conversation today with Julie.
Great to have Julie joining us today, and you are in sunny California today. You're outside.
Which, yes.
I'm a little jealous. I'm looking out at snow today, so I know you know what that's about.
Yes, I'm getting that vitamin D. It's with everyone being remote, it's a lot easier to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess first off, can you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your background?
Sure. Well, my parents and I were refugees from the former Soviet Union, and we immigrated to the United States when I was a baby. I was 1 year old when we came and settled in Chicago, and which is actually my home. We came with $116 in our pockets, and my mother learned English watching General Hospital. So it's really a true story. And my parents got into the food industry when they recognized that while there was a lot of food in the United States, it's different than their Slavic food. So that sort of started their entry into the food industry. And my mom opened the first Russian deli in Chicago, which became kind of like ground zero for the Russian immigrants that were coming. And then shortly after, she became an importer and distributor of Eastern European food. And they were in Germany on a food buying show. This was like 9 years into immigration. And my dad bought 3 bottles of kefir, which is like a probiotic yogurt-like superfood that's been around for 2,000 years. It's a staple from the former Soviet Union. So they decide, my dad bought these bottles and he drank a bottle right outside of the grocery store there in Germany when they were at the trade show. And my dad just said, America has everything, but it doesn't have kefir. And my mother said, well, you're an engineer. Why don't you design a plant, design the machinery, make the kefir, and I'll sell it through my distribution system. And 6 months later, they incorporated the business and started selling kefir. And I was just like a little kid watching them build their business and helping them. Like I was doing, demos, grocery store demos when I was 11 years old, helping do deliveries with my dad. I remember doing deliveries at midnight, during spring break and whatnot. So definitely like watch my parents build their business. And I actually thought I was going to be a psychologist. I started grad school for psychology. I was an in-home family therapist. I worked with kids with a lot of abuse and trauma. And I serendipitously walked into my father's office one day. I was working part-time for him, like 10 hours doing data entry. And it just clicked that I could channel my passions for wanting to improve the world and reduce suffering and help people make better for you lifestyle choices through using the education that I had, but using it in like a for-profit business that using like entrepreneurship was actually felt more like I was able to impact change and help lead that change more so than if I became a psychologist. And so anyways, ended up in my dad's office, came to work for him full time, did not come back for grad school for my second year, and stayed with my dad for 5 years until he had a sudden heart attack and he died suddenly at the age of 55. And I became the CEO the next day at the age of 27. And I've been doing it almost for like 20 years now. Not quite, but we're getting there next year. I think it'll be 20 years. So that's basically the short version of that.
Sure. Well, at 27, I just think back to when I was 27, what I was doing and becoming the CEO at 27. I think you were the youngest female CEO of a publicly traded company. Is that correct? At that point?
Yeah.
What was that like? Tell me that first day. What was it? I'm sure with all the emotion that you had losing a father, as well as taking on the responsibility. Talk a little bit about that.
For sure. It was one of the most surreal experiences. For starters, no one really believed in me. The day that my dad died, like all the friends came together at my mom's house and support her. His best friend said to me, there's no way a 27-year-old girl can run a company. That's it. The company's over. Sell your stock. It's done. And that kind of launched me because it got me really angry. It pissed me off. And I really felt like I needed to prove him wrong. And, I'm sure a lot of people were feeling that way. And it just inspired me to prove them wrong. For me, if I'm told no, it only inspires me to push harder. And I feel like that statement has kind of fueled me for the last 20 years and inspired me. And, I just put my head down and did the work. Yes, while my friends were, raving and partying and dating and doing all these things, I was, running company. And, there was definitely pluses and minuses. It was crazy. I'm in a peer group of mostly, other, let's say, CEOs who were all mostly male and 30 to 40 years older than me in some cases. But I had a lot of positives going my way too. I was very intuitive. I followed my gut. That's, I think, what I leaned into consistently was, following my gut. And, in the first few days, it was just getting stable with what I was, trying to do and figure out just how to make decisions. And it was just one decision day by day. It was so overwhelming, but I got this advice, like, I'm sure everyone knows it. Like, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? And that kind of stuck with me. And that helped me kind of get through each challenge that came. And there were a lot, there's still a lot. But what I will say is actually that time, that being thrown into that crisis and leading through that, mourning at the same time as being called to step up, talk to investors, put on my big girl pants and really be forced to become an adult. That I feel like really prepped me for the time in leading now. Mm-hmm. That there are certain skills that I know that I have that I was able to lean into at this time. And it really helped. It helped me make decisions swiftly and with confidence, with some wisdom and perspective now that I didn't have then. That was my crisis and I was the only one going through that crisis. This time around, it's a global crisis and we're all going through it together. So it feels like less lonely. But certainly just having gone through many crises in my life and being able to get through them, I think has been helping me now. And helping me share that with others to let everyone know that we'll get through this time right now and it will be okay. It doesn't feel like it right now for so many people, but I'm very confident that, at the end of this, at the other side of it, there will be really incredible transformative innovation and changes in how we live, and some things will be for the better. Some things will say, boy, we really learned we want to keep this and we want to let this go or whatever, but we'll get through it.
So talk a little bit about, you mentioned that kind of the time that you went through at 27, walking in as the new CEO of a publicly traded company, having to deal with a board and all that goes along with that. What have you done? You said you've taken some of those lessons into this last 10, 11 months that we've been dealing with as a worldwide. But talk a little bit, how have you pivoted as a company and how have you managed through this time?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think being there for our community, you know, really understanding the challenges that our community is facing, being, you know, let's say multiple people in a household and Zoom schools and remote working and trying to get everyone fed and having to do, you know, dishes so many times and, you know, just the hunt for pantry, you know, getting into the grocery store and seeing empty shelves. Like, I think, you know, understanding, like, Lifeway was started because my parents were living in a community where there was food scarcity and a constant fear that there was not going to be enough food. And that feels very similar right now. You know, that story of scarcity and why my parents left the Soviet Union has stuck with me and guides today. And so, for example, one of the things we did in the first days of the announcement of lockdown was knowing that a big chunk of our children in the United States get one nutritious meal from school. And if school is shut down, we know that there's going to be a huge percentage of kids, like in the Chicago public school system, there's 20,000 kids that are, you know, 20,000 are food insecure, let's say. And so, you know, one of the things we did was initially start reaching out to all the food pantries that we work with and make sure that they were well stocked. So we've been able to deliver over 250,000 servings of kefir. One of the things that we did was connect to our nation's food pantries and make sure that they had inventory of kefir, you know, across the country. So we've donated over 250,000 servings to food pantries. And then, you know, we know that, for example, many people are using kefir medicinally for their immune system. So we want to make sure that healthcare workers had access to kefir and made, you know, a lot of donations in the healthcare system. Just being able to respond really quickly. You know, one of the things is just being well prepared and knowing how people react when there is a crisis. I was 4 years old in 1979 during the Chicago historic snowstorm. If you're not from Chicago, you probably don't know it, but there's this historic snowstorm in 79. And within, you know, hours of it being announced, all of the milk, eggs, and toilet paper and bread were sold off of all of the grocery store shelves. Lines for gas. You know, it was a crisis in Chicago. And I remember that. My father used to tell me that story all the time. And when the pandemic started happening, that story was ringing through my head. And I just kept thinking, we have to be really prepared because this isn't just a Chicago crisis. This is a nationwide global crisis. And so I was able to, you know, prepare, tell my team to stock up on inventory and supply chain and to do like all these extra supply chain things. So we had like 7 weeks of inventory where many companies only had 3 days, especially for a perishable product. So these kinds of decisions that kind of felt very intuitive for me, I was able to not think that I was crazy for thinking these things, but I reacted to the feelings that I had intuitively, like with confidence. You know, it's times you are faced with a decision and you could talk yourself out of it because you think, oh, it's crazy to think that way. But this time around, you know, I just knew what I had to do. And it sounded crazy to other people, but I was, you know, I just felt like I knew what to do in this crisis because I had lived through them in my past. Things like that, or like, you know, securing PPE for my team, you know, by mid-March at our company, we already had a mask mandate that was months ahead of a national mask advisory. You know, things like that felt intuitive for me. And I think it potentially could have saved lives for us, you know, saved lives for our team. And so, you know, these kinds, you know, just being able to be compassionate and empathetic to the challenges that not only the team on the Lifeway side had, but how our communities are, the challenges that they're faced with. And certainly eating multiple times a day has been a challenge for so many people, you know? And so those are some of the things that we've done.
So how have you kept your leadership team connected during this time? Are you working as a team virtually?
Yeah, the team is all remote, and then we have like our essential workers in the production plant, and you know they are social distanced. We've put in extra barriers and whatnot for shields and all of that for the deliveries and drivers and things like that. But we've been keeping our essential workers like in bubble wrap, basically.
Sure.
There and different teams are like quarantined. So we have like all these backup teams and whatnot, and, portions of the team in quarantine so that they can, swap out people. And so it's been challenging, but everyone else is just working remotely. The collaboration, it's interesting to see that we can continue to collaborate. Some people like it more, some people have been able to use this time to be outside more, but still get to do their work. And it just seems to be everyone's kind of finding their groove with it. We're adjusting to it. And I think that's really important that in the challenges, it's not about trying to hold on to how it was, but to pivot right. and evolve into what it is today and to see it clearly for how it is and to adapt. I think that's the key is being able to adapt. And then we're a society that's constantly adapting, and people are very resilient. We are as a human species resilient to even trauma and crisis.
So thinking back, and we have a number of people that listen in, and they're new leaders. They're maybe leading their first team, or they're taking on responsibility. Thinking back to when you first started leading, as you jumped into that CEO role, what do you wish you would have known about leading and having a team, either hiring or managing a team? What are some things that you wish you would have known earlier?
Well, I think that there are times when I've probably outsourced too much decision making to a management team, and I think especially for female leaders, that's both good and bad. And without saying too much, I would say to feel empowered and to know in your gut when something doesn't feel right, to really pay attention to it. I guess I continuously say, follow your gut, go with your gut. There are times when I have let things go that my gut is like screaming at me that something doesn't feel right. And whether it's because I don't want to deal with it, I don't have time, I have other priorities or whatever, that gut feeling is always right. Whether it's about, a staffing issue, an operations issue, a product launch, a customer, whatever that is, I have found my gut is always right almost on the first, response, first time. The other thing that I've discovered is that sometimes things don't go the way that you want them to go. And you think that it's the end of the world. It's, the end to your business plan, your business idea, whatever it is. It doesn't go the way that you want it to go. And it feels like a crisis. It feels like the world is falling apart. How could this happen? And what I found in hindsight 2020, it's usually for the better good of some future, that like be thankful for the things that don't work out, because there's usually a bigger, something better, something, that no or thing that feels like a failure usually turns out to be the best thing that could have happened. And that usually takes time to unfold and for you to see what's that hindsight. So, I would say take those failures as opportunities, as lessons, as blessings, and to have compassion with yourself and have empathy with yourself and to, And the last thing for mental health, because I feel like that's one of the greatest challenges as a leader, that you're kind of alone in it many times, and that's very isolating, and I felt very isolated. But the thing that I always went back to was my self-care and the practices that are lifelong practices of wellness, that these are the things that got me through those very challenging, stressful moments. It's like being in nature, getting out to sun, eating well, you know, drinking kefir. Gut health is the key to everything, as we are now more and more knowing. You know, getting exercise every day, at least 20 minutes, raising your endorphins, your serotonin. These are really, it seems like it's not a lot, but the level of stress, the feeling of having the world on your shoulders as a, you know, as a leader can be like not just draining, but debilitating to so many, you know, people. Like, you know, when my dad died, I could have just laid in bed and put the, you know, covers over my head and not wanted to deal with it and not want to deal with the challenges and but, you know, I faced those challenges, and the way that I got through those days when, you know, I spent sobbing at what was happening, I went out for a run and I always felt better and came back with an idea, you know, a solution or something to take me to the next level. And so I would just say to any entrepreneur, you know, put your own oxygen mask on before you can, you know, help anyone else, and take care of yourself first.
So I know you're involved in giving back. You've mentioned some of the things you're doing in the community, but what are some of the other things that you're passionate about and some of your causes that you're involved in?
Yeah, well, I am really passionate about ending violence against women. I've spent a lot of time, my kind of leisure time, quote unquote, working on, you know, issues and, you know, prevention, education, justice issues, whatever, in that space. I've worked with the UN and done some work internationally on not just those issues, but a variety of, you know, entrepreneurship internationally, and even some vaccine things, vaccine drives, back in the day. But yeah, I mean, mostly I think my big, passion would be to, you know, leave the world a better place for my daughters and, help change culture, I think. And so I've done a couple of movies. I've helped produce 4 films, and feel like that's a good way to kind of scale that passion, you know, help create a tool, be part of a team that's working on an issue and sharing a message that, you know, can be shared easily. So I love film work. Been doing that. But yeah, I started a nonprofit to help end the backlog of untested rape kits. So worked on and changing some laws and implementing some rape kit reform laws. So haven't done anything.
Yeah, on your free time, right? So yeah. Well, what parting advice would you give a new leader as they're in maybe moving into that first position?
Yeah, I mean, definitely take care of yourself. That would probably be the number one thing, you know, take care of yourself. Definitely do your practice your self-care. I think we're just starting to understand like the microbiome and its impact in our lives, bacteria, friendly bacteria. And, you know, now more than ever, we're understanding that our health is linked to each other, that we're only as healthy as our community is. And so I think this time is like a portal for some of the big lessons about life, which is, you know, our health, once your health is gone, doesn't matter. You know, this disease does not discriminate whether you're, you know, a Harvard grad or dropped out of high school or what age you are. Like, you know, it's once your health is gone and you can't buy it, you know, you can't buy it once it's gone. You can't come back to life. The fact that it's my career, that like my team that we work on purpose, that this is our purpose, to bring health to people. And I guess like it feels like people appreciate that today. Like they finally understand that that's actually what's important. And we all, it's kind of the universal truth, like all around the world, everybody is just trying to stay healthy. You know, parents, families are worried for each other, for loved ones, and it's all based on health. And so to know that I spend my career helping people, you know, bring forth a healthier life, and that we're empowered to make these small choices that can have lasting big impact is very powerful, not only for me, but for my team. And I guess kind of the bigger picture as entrepreneurs go forward in their business plans, that it should not be just about profits. I think that's another thing we're learning. If it's just profits, like that's a failing business model. But to really make sure that you have a clear purpose in your business and that there is some element of bringing some pain point, solving some pain points. And there are so many right now, like there are so many pain points that we have. So it's an opportunity. It's a huge opportunity to solve a pain point and to have purpose for yourself and, you know, use your skills to reduce suffering in the world somehow is to me very, very important to, you know, help bring people together in some way. Seems like a good thing to be working on if I was an entrepreneur a new entrepreneur.
So how would somebody learn more about your company and products as well as what you're doing?
Yeah, well, we're active on all of the social media platforms. So, you know, you could just visit Lifeway Kefir and you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, even TikTok. My daughter sometimes do the TikToks. I'm at Julie Smolansky. I'm mostly active just on Instagram. And you can find some stuff there. But yeah, we have recipes and stuff on the Lifeway page. I actually wrote a cookbook that kind of shares the versatility and things you can do with kefir. And it kind of shares a lot of family stories and entrepreneurial stories and some personal things from my life. So that it's just kind of fun. So definitely take a look. It's, kind of a great little cookbook to have, especially as we start a new year, new goals. And so there's lots of ways to learn about Lifeway and kefir and, you know, I don't know, me too.
Okay. Anyway, okay. <Yeah. laughs> So you just shot a TV show today. Is that right?
Yeah.
And when will that air?
It just aired today, actually.
It did. Okay.
Yeah, so it's on the Drew Barrymore show. So that was so fun. It was so cool because Drew is the same age as me, and I just remember being a kid and watching E.T. in the theater. You know, I think it was the first film I ever saw in the movie theater. When back in the day when like the lines would be around the block to get one of those blockbuster films out.
Sure.
It was just so cool to be on the show with her sharing our story. So yeah, check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for taking some time out and definitely wish you continued success in your career as you lead your company and all that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was nice to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.